Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
Today, we're talking about Squid Game, or playing Squid Game, or whatever that is. I'm doing like a squid in my mouth, because I don't really know what Squid Game is. I never watched it, and, well, I'll tell you why in our medium shot, but name of the game today is Justin's going to explain Squid Game to me as best as he can, what he likes about it, non-spoiler, for all those of you who haven't seen Squid Game and might want to see Squid Game, depending on his explanations, no pressure. But getting into our medium shot now, Squid Game, well, I mean, it's very popular. I have been on the internet over the years, so I know it's a thing. I remember one time we went to Fan Expo and they were doing Squid Game games on stage. Actually, I don't think you were there that year, but they got people up on stage to try and perform some Squid Game games for like a little prize or something. There was a lot of Squid Game cosplays I've seen around. I've seen the guys with the triangles on their faces or whatever.
They're not just triangles.
See, I have no idea. It just looks like a cool costume piece with a pyramid on your face, like it's Illuminati or something. Maybe they are the Illuminati, I don't know. I think they're bad guys. So the reason I haven't watched Squid Game is because I'm a contrarian and it's popular. No, I haven't watched Squid Game because it just never looked that interesting to me. And there's always been more things on TV that I want to see. And it's just one of those ones that's been so down my list of priorities that I just never bother to watch it, and full disclosure, I probably am not going to. It's just never going to be high enough of a priority for me, but I am curious what Justin has to say about it. Try to educate me a little bit on what I'm missing out on, probably, because I've heard it is good. And before we get into it, at the end of this episode, Justin's going to do a full spoiler review for season 3 of Squid Game. So if you're curious about that, look at the time codes in the description. You can skip to that if you want, or watch the whole thing through if you don't care about being spoiled. So yeah, let's get into our close-up. And
so,
what's Squid Game?
Well, I found Squid Game because I watched another show. It was called Alice in Borderlands, and it didn't get its second season renewed till after Squid Game completely blew up, because the show's, it was okay. And then I was like, oh, what's this? Something new on Netflix. I have a habit of watching random stuff on Netflix. Some of it becomes popular and some of it does not.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched Squid Game the first season, like right as it came out, because I was like, oh, this is just like that other show. And, yeah.
You were a couple months ahead of the curve on everybody, right?
Yeah, there was another one that I was ahead of, just because I will literally watch things on Netflix. It's just, like, absolutely brand new. Nobody's been talking about it. Nobody's said anything. And sometimes it's absolutely terrible. Some of them are terrible. But Squid Game was surprisingly very good.
Mm-hmm.
As many people found out.
Sure.
So essentially the pitch for Squid Game is a guy, he's down on his luck. He's got like no money. He owes lots of debts. He's a little daughter and his mother at home who is sick. She's got bills to pay. You know, they're all kind of relying on him. So he's got to find money, basically. And essentially, there's a group that runs a game, a series of games, that you can make money doing. Now, this is a very secretive operation, and they find all these people that are down on their luck, you know, like homeless people or anybody they can find that would be willing to do this game.
You're making it start to sound like a bad thing. I thought it was going to be wholesome entertainment.
No,
a great
it's not
game
wholesome
show
entertainment
to help down on their luck people make money.
Yeah, no, because
like Mr. Beast or something.
The way they find a lot of them is they play a street game where it's like, yeah, I'll give you, I think it was, I'll give you a little bit of money. I can't remember what it was on their side. If you can play this game where they slap something down on the floor. If I win, I'm going to slap you. So it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, how much is my dignity worth? That's their, like, test to find out whether you're good or not. So right away, you know that it's like, oh, yes, I'm going to bet money to slap you if you don't win this game. Right away, it kind of tells you the kind of people you're dealing with. So basically, they take all these people, there's 456 of them. They strip them down, they number them, everybody's called by their numbers. They're all wearing the same uniform. It's kind of like a Holocaust camp in a way.
Okay.
Where they kind of strip that identity of them. But basically they go and they make them play children's games. Children's games that tend to involve guns and bullets if you fail.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people that die in this. Okay. And it's a bloody mess, but for every person that dies, a bit more money gets added to the prize.
Okay. Sure. So why do the death trigger more money being added to the prize?
For entertainment purposes.
Is it like outside people, kind of like a telemarketing situation? Oh, cool, somebody died, I'll donate more money to the pot, or is it...
Essentially, it's entertainment for uber-rich people.
Okay.
And so I'm guessing they sponsor it, and that's where the money would come from.
All right. And they pay up when people die?
They know the amount of money. Okay. I think they showed the amount of money at the beginning, and it's like, okay, but now this money's going to go into the piggy bank that's up above every time. At the end of every game, they're like, oh, we'll total up the deaths, and then it's filling up, and everybody's like looking at this piggy bank like, oh man, oh, that's a lot of money.
All right, so they kind of know in advance how much money is going to get paid out and how many contestants there are, so they could do a bit of dividing math. Every life lost is worth this much money to add into the bank visually. So they can see, oh, when it's just down to one, I get it all. So is it supposed to get down to one, or is it, can you share it?
The first season, the idea is that it's supposed to get down to one. The second and third season, which the first season runs one course of the game. The second and third season is where they spent more time and they ran one course of the game across two seasons. So it had a bit more time to breathe to really play with stuff. But for the first season, yeah, they're pretty much pitched that it's going to be down to one.
Okay. And do you know why they picked 456 people specifically? Why that very specific number? Why not 500, 450?
I have no idea. There's not really a reason. As far as I can remember, there's no reason.
There's not some deep thematic reason where 456 keep popping up in different places. It's a weird number or something that's like burning into your brain. 456, remember that number, see it crop up everywhere.
Well, I mean, the prize is something like $45.6 million. But I think that's based on the number of players. So maybe it's just the amount of money the rich people were willing to spend. But
and somebody was really lazy at math and didn't want to divide it out.
I think it makes it really easy to remember the main character's number because he's contestant number 456.
Okay. He's the loser. He's bottom of the pack.
Yeah. Well, everybody's a number, okay? Just being the last number doesn't mean anything.
And how did he get that number? By being the most hesitant and the last one to show up in line? Or did they just randomly assign the numbers?
I think they just randomly assigned the numbers.
It's not even alphabetical order.
No.
His name doesn't start with a Z.
No. As far as I'm aware, there's not a heck of a lot of reasoning to it.
So what do the games have to do with squids?
Barely anything.
So why are they the squid games?
Well, each one of these children's games they play is like a real children's game.
Yep.
With minor changes to make it more deadly. But apparently one of the games is called Squid Game.
Okay.
That they play.
Okay. The only one I'm familiar with that they play is the red light, green light one.
Yes, that's the first one.
And there was something to do with a honeycomb challenge that was pretty popular that I don't really know what it was about, but they need to like cut a picture out of honeycomb
or something. Yeah. Like sugar cookies.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah. That was a thing for a while.
Yeah.
How were those games? Were they fun?
Stressful, especially the sugar cookie one.
So it's an intense kind of show then.
It is very intense. When you watch like this red light, green light is brutal. You know, like,
yep.
You're not just being eliminated because somebody's going, "Oh, you're out." You're getting shot. Okay, fine. Somebody dies. But what happens if the person directly in front of you gets shot? And you're like, oh, well, you just moved too. There can be chain reactions. These games are not simple when you're actually watching the contestants play the games. They're more complicated than it seems on the surface, even though they are just children's games, basically. Adaptions of children's games.
Okay. And do they ever get into the psychology of the people shooting these people? Is anybody ever like, oh, what am I doing with my life, killing people on a game show?
Yeah, so that's what made the second and third season really interesting to me, because the first season was a major hit. They made a lot of money on it, so they got enough time to really expand their focus and tell the story the way they wanted to in the second and third season. So they got to explore aspects like that, and they got to explore the aspects of why people would want to play this game in the first place. Because they kind of hinted at it where like the first episode basically is like everybody goes and they're like, they after the first game, they're like, I don't want to play this. Well, fine, if you want to vote and we'll let you all out. And they get let out.
So you're not locked in.
No, not at first. But then they reinvite people and almost everybody comes back despite having watched X amount of people just get gunned down in this game. They're that desperate for money that they come back. And they really explored that idea in the second season more. Because they kind of did that function after every round. So it had a more of an effect on the actual, almost like the idea that they're trying to sell, that it's like, okay, how far will people go? And they had a perfect analogy in, you know, the recruiter is like, oh, do you want bread or a scratch ticket? No, nothing, but you can have one or the other one. And it kind of gives a micro version of the entire point of Squid Game, is that the creators believe, what the creators believe and they want to say about this is that, okay, almost everybody will take the scratch ticket. You know, he's giving out bread or scratch ticket to homeless people, and it's like, do you want the bread or do you want the scratch ticket?
Yeah.
And that kind of gives you it's just a micro version of the entire show done right there, seeing their beliefs on people, basically.
Are you going to take today's sustenance or play the game for more or nothing?
Yeah. Without this bread, you might die today, but you could take the scratch ticket and you could get very lucky and win. And it'll be life-changing.
So, not to branch off that specifically, but are there any named antagonists who are a major part of this show? Or is it just some faceless corporation and we mostly focus on the players?
The first season, the only, like, named antagonist is probably the rich people, but they're not really the antagonists. They're just more of an audience point of view, basically.
Okay.
In a way, well, not really. Kind of. Somewhat.
So we're not specifically meant to root against these people, or? Is there really even an antagonist to the show?
There is. Because they've made clear, like, there's hierarchy to the masked people. You've got your circles, you've got your squares, and you've got your triangles. And you eventually learn, you know, who's higher up in the food chain. And then you've got, there's a guy with a very distinct mask who is the one who's entertaining the rich people. Or kind of hosting the rich people. So you know he's the host of the games. So he's kind of the antagonist.
Okay.
I guess. And he carries through right to the end. He's the main antagonist through all three seasons, basically.
Sure. So we mostly focus on the contestants as they're playing these games then?
Most of the time, yeah.
So does it even really matter the people they're fighting against, or is it just the fact that they're fighting against an institution?
Well, for the first season, see, that's the thing, is the first season is very, it's its own thing, it's finding its footing, it doesn't have as much going on, where the second and third seasons really branched off to have more of that depth that you would want. Mm-hmm. Where you actually get to know the people behind the game as well. You have characters there that you're telling stories about and you're following.
Because I can see both sides. I can see why people would want to know more about the people running these games, but I can also see how it would be compelling to keep your point of view locked in and you never really get to see the people who are causing you all this torture?
Oh, definitely, definitely, yeah. You really only get a feel for like, the host and a couple other people, and then one really low-level, just basic worker. You get a feel for, like, two or three of these characters that work for the operation. And very minimally as well. Most of the time, it's focused on either the players or the cop who's the other side of things. There's the cop who's trying to figure this out. And I forget what tipped him off in the first place. I think he was specifically looking for 456.
Okay. And when you say figure this out, do you mean, are these games not well known outside of rich circles?
No, they're very secretive. They pretty much don't exist, to the point where it's like, even when they're trying to find anything out about it, it's almost impossible to find anything.
Okay. So it's basically just like, we're going to get homeless people and people who are down on their luck and nobody's going to miss them anyway.
Nobody will miss them, yes.
So it's not even just like a Running Man sort of situation where you're just throwing people into gladiatorial combat and craziness. No,
these are people that will go missing and nobody will miss them, basically.
Okay.
And that kind of feeds into the whole overarching concept of how, like, they don't care about the poor people, basically.
So was this a story, do you believe? that deserved to be dragged out to three seasons?
It could have wrapped up in the first season. If the second and third season didn't work as well as they did, I don't think it really would have been necessary to do another season, but also it did extremely well. People were really interested in it. And I think it had a lot of legs behind it to make the second and third season, because it had those ideals that were in there. It was just buried really, really deep, and they didn't get enough time to explore it. And they really got to push those ideas and you know, really explore the concepts behind everything over the course of the latter two seasons. And I, for one, was very impressed with it. Besides all the game stuff, like, the camera work is pretty interesting. The practical sets are pretty interesting. There's some CGI used in it, but there's a lot more practical stuff that goes into it than you would expect. And okay. The outside of the game is very well done film-wise, especially going like the latter two seasons. You actually really like the world outside the game.
So is the world basically just some version of our contemporary world, or is it a future? Okay.
Yeah. No, it's just interesting the way they have, like, the way the characters interact, the way things work in the outside world is interesting. They make the regular world, without going too far out of their way, like, just small scenes like, oh, he's in the subway and he's playing this game with this random guy in a suit getting slapped. Like, the outside world is so well done that, like, the second season really gave you more of the outside world before the games actually start. And I was really invested in the story outside the games. I was almost disappointed when it went into the games. And I'm like, oh.
Well, to that point, I was wondering, do they manage to keep three seasons of these games from feeling gimmicky? Or is it more like, all right, here's the new game somebody's shockingly gonna die in. All right, let's do this again.
The games are all, most of them are pretty distinct. I found the third season particularly, especially having to follow the first season, the second season, and now they've got to the third season of games. The third season games were really well executed and really well thought out, even though some of the games seemed a little bit more simple. They used those themes of humanity to make the game more interesting, especially because you get to know the characters over the course of the second season. Going into the third season, you understand these characters, so it's a lot easier for them to make the game more interesting because you can see the process is going through each individual character's head. Like,
so the games do still have some relevancy. It's not just for shock value then?
No, definitely.
They're not pulling a Westworld where they're like, well, the park is kind of ceases to be relevant after season two, so we're just not doing that anymore.
No, see, they went about the second and third season in such a different way. I'm going to give a little minor spoiler. No, wait, that's a pretty major spoiler. No, I won't say that.
All right. You saved our audience.
Yeah. No, I'll save it for later. But, they do a pretty good job keeping it interesting. The second season had some games that started to feel gimmicky, but it also, maybe that was them trying to fill a season, but also sticking to the theme of having 456 people, they had to have enough games to get rid of enough people for you to actually find the ones that matter, the characters that are like, okay, these are the ones we're going to follow, you know, to closer to the end, where the character deaths are actually going to matter to the audience. Where, and I think that's where the second season lost a little bit, because the first season did the same thing, but shorter. You have lots of generic characters that you know lots of people are going to die, but then coming in the back half, you start to know, okay, these, now we're down to a number of characters. And you know quite a few of them. But enough to be like, okay, maybe there's like 10 characters that you know or care about. Maybe less. Probably more like 7 or 6 in the first season. And that's where season 2 kind of loses things a little bit, just because that second season. Now, to be fair, the first chunk was the outside world. Then they had the rest of the second season, the games, was probably about 2/3 of the season.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, you're getting to know some of the characters, but some of the characters you're just like, okay, well, how many characters are we going to get to know? Which ones matter? There's a lot of people that are just dying because they're extras, right?
All right.
And that's where the second season doesn't have a heck of a lot of stakes that way until...
So is the second season really just setting up, teeing up for the third?
In a way, they still found a way to keep it interesting because, you know, they had the first third where it was something different. Then they had the second third where you're playing the games again. And then they had a section at the end that played a whole different type of game, which made things interesting. And we saw a bit more of the background. So they really divided the second season up quite a bit. That's why when it's like, okay, well, when we're talking about explicitly the games, yeah, the games in the second season are kind of gimmicky, but it's only a portion of the second season. Okay. Whereas the third season was pretty well all games, but it was narrowed down at that point. So you actually had a lot more stakes in the characters and stuff.
All right. So how would you break down the core themes of the show? If you were to...
Well, there's definitely, like, the themes of greed, obviously. Not only with like, oh yeah, you get the rich people, but amongst the players as well. There's a lot of times that comes into account. And the value of life. Right? When you've got a monetary value of like, oh, how many people died? And that could be benefiting me? So there's themes like that. And I'm trying to think what else.
Class seems to be it.
Well, definitely class plays into it. Not a super amount. More that theme on the value of life is pretty much the core theme of the show. And it's also, there's the value of life, but then there's people's perception on the value of life is another theme that is heavily played into. Where it's like, yeah, those are kind of the same thing. They're not really, it's related, but, you know, somebody's perception of other people's value is a lot. And that's not talking about the rich people. The rich people are not very important at all. You could almost get rid of them from the show, but they don't take up a lot of screen time. So
you're talking about more the player versus player scenario. Yes.
The players' ideals. Yeah.
How much am I going to be working with you guys to, you know, maybe form alliances to get us as far as possible? But there comes a time when only one of us can win and stab your friends in the back. Do you
try to keep especially the first season where they know that it's like, okay, they know it's going to come down to one person is going to walk away with this.
Do you keep some self-honor here? Fight for your own survival? You got choices.
So when they go over like the second version of the game where they've changed things and created a voting system to end the games at any time as long as a majority votes to end it, which actually added a lot of drama to it where it's like, okay, who's voting which way? And it's like, okay, you've got people who are still voting to stay in the game. Everybody's going to divide up the money. But then it's like, okay, do we play one more game? Could I make more money?
Yep.
And that's where that core idea of what's a person's value really comes in, when it's like, okay, you could influence this and end this at any time. But at the same time, these people dying is making you more money.
I see. So is there anything else about the show you haven't talked about thus far that you're like, this is what sets it apart to me, this is what makes it either more interesting or unique to anything else on TV right now?
Well, to do that, I'd have to go into more spoiling the first season.
Okay, so we'll save that for
the
spoiler section. Any other non-spoiler thoughts about why you like Squid Game?
The set design is cool. The costumes are interesting. There's a lot of uniqueness to it, especially not being uber familiar with, like, you know, Asian children's games. There's some unique games here, and it's pretty interesting. You're also seeing a different culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all in Korean, except for the rich people are Americans.
Mm, yeah.
Of course.
Sure.
But.
All right. Yeah. So that's Justin's explanation of Squid Game, non-spoiler for those of you who haven't seen it. So now be prepared. I'm giving you a bit of buffer time because we're going to be talking about Squid Game Season 3, full spoilers for Season 3 and probably Season 1 and 2 as well. For those of you who don't mind being spoiled, you might hear some other pretty cool things about the show to recommend you. Get into it. Does it end well?
I'm not sure how I feel about the ending. Right off the bat.
So it is the end then, right? It's supposed to be?
It's supposed to be the end. They've set it up that there could definitely be like an American spin-off show.
Of course.
Technically branched. So the problem I was having before is because the second and third season were done so well, but the setup for the second season relies on you knowing the end of the first season. The end of the first season is the main character 456 wins the game.
Yep.
He's the last one.
And he won, yay.
The second season, instead of getting on the plane and taking his money and going away where they wanted him to leave the country, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you know, we can, he already lost his daughter. His mother died. He lost his daughter, custody of his daughter, because his mother died while he was in the games. So, and she was the only one taking care of her. But so basically he had nothing left, and it was like, okay, here's your money, leave, go somewhere else. He does not. He turns around, he takes his money, and he wants to try to end the games, basically.
Okay. And why does he... Because he feels they're unfair, they're predatory. He's got a vendetta.
He disagrees with their opinion of the value of life, basically.
Okay.
He believes that even though these people are deadbeats to society, basically, he still believes that people deserve respect and deserve to live. Even though the bad guys position it that it's like, no, this is a good thing. We're cleaning up the homeless people and giving them a second chance at, you know, they're getting their lottery ticket to try to win.
Yep.
But he thoroughly disagrees with that. So he spends part of the second season trying to just to find them again. And what ends up happening is he gets back in the games. They put him back specifically, but they know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they changed the game to be like, okay, because, you know, they're like, why would you come back? And that's his argument, is that it's like, no, I think people are inherently good. I think that these people wouldn't want to be here. So to prove their point to him, they let them vote every time to end the game. At any point after each game, they're given the chance to end the game, but it's got to be a majority vote. And they're so confident in it that they're like, they'll just keep playing. That's how humanity is. They will just keep playing. They will always take the scratch ticket. They will not take the bread. Maybe you would take the bread, but they will. Oh, the majority is always going to take the scratch ticket.
Yeah.
So, and that's what made the second and third season play out much more interesting than the first, is that there was a point to what, like, they were specifically trying to prove a point to 4, 5, 6. So you had more, like, more interaction between 4, 5, 6 and the actual, you know,
yeah,
the bad guys, basically. He was the only person who's ever come back.
Yep.
So that made the season much more interesting. Just because.
So how does that spin into your problem for season 3? Or at least the ending to it.
Okay, so we're in the full spoilers. All right, yeah. I talked about season 2, what made it unique. Now I'm going to go full spoilers for the third season. So third season is where it got... Season 2 ended with 4, 5, 6, and a bunch of former military guys. Basically, they all kind of figure out that they're former military. They're like, they make a plan to try and forcefully stop the games. They get a hold of weapons and they try to forcefully stop the games. When this goes very poorly, everybody else dies. And because they're making a point with 4, 5, 6, they don't kill him. They bring him back. He's the only one who's allowed to live. And it's because he's frustrated at that point that his worldview is being messed with, because he's watching, he no matter what he says, he's told the truth. He's like, I've been here before. These games always get bad. You know, no matter what he tries to do, he cannot convince them to stop the games. Nobody will vote to stop the games. So his personal worldview is being shifted. And that's when he tries to start his coup, basically. And then they throw him right back, and he's like, damn it, you know? So going into season 3, now we've got it narrowed down to the core cast of characters. And I think that definitely helps with a lot of motivations. You understand things. There's a game that was really simple. I thought this one was going to be boring. And it's like, okay, you know, okay, you're dividing into two teams. You got cat and mouse, and there's a bunch of doors, and if you unlock the door, it can't be locked again. So they give keys to the mice and a knife to the cats. But that's basically the only rule is the mice gotta live, and the cat's gotta kill at least one person. And 4, 5, 6 is a cat. So seeing him go through this idea where it's like, okay, now he's being forced. He has to physically kill someone to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea of his, like, value on life, you know, you get that subtlety through his acting. He's a very good actor. Very good. Like, you get a lot from his facial expressions. And
I've only ever seen him on The Acolyte, but his facial expressions play subtext pretty well. He's good at that.
He's very good at that. He's very, very good. there's a lot of stuff going on with this character, especially shifting from being the guy who's just there for money and to save his daughter and his mother, basically, and trying to survive, to more of an idealist who's like, no. So you get a lot of shifting parts to his character and a lot of the other characters. So the major spoiler, I guess I'll cover the ending.
How does it end?
How does it end? One of the main characters that we knew was pregnant had her baby mid-game. And the rich guys are like, you know, 4, 5, 6 is like, okay, I'll help the baby survive. Well, the baby's mother dies. And the dispute between the rich people is like, no. That's still a part of 222. The baby should count as a number. So the baby's given a number.
All right.
Is to keep up the mother's number, basically.
Okay.
Which makes the game really complicated. And I really liked the final two episodes. Or was it the final episode? I don't know. Maybe it was the final two. The final game played out really interestingly because they had like 9 of them left, including the baby. And it was like, okay, well, let's vote to end the game. They're like, well, why don't we give you a spoiler for what the next game's going to be? You guys are going to get the choice. You're going to have to eliminate 3 people. And you guys are all going to get to decide on it amongst yourselves. And there's distinctly 2 groups of people there. There's the people who voted to stay, and the people, and then there's the baby, 4, 5, 6, and one other guy that voted to leave. So they've made it pretty clear who these other guys are like gonna vote to be like, no.
Yeah.
And so obviously they're like, okay, well, we'll play the game. 4, 5, 6 is given the chance the night before. They're all drunk. And they're still testing 4, 5, 6. They're still testing him and pushing him. They're trying to push him past his limits to finally break him. And they give him a knife. And they're like, yeah, you can go eliminate the other players if you go kill all those other guys. Just go kill those guys that are all gonna vote the other way, and then you'll get to swing the vote. Easy.
Yep.
And he almost does it, and then he doesn't. Because he still believes in the value of life. But then they have to play the game.
Yep.
So the final game was they've got like these pillars that are way up, and it's like, okay, all you gotta do is push the button, start the game, push somebody off. Decide as a group how you do it. Well, then they eliminate the one guy. He's the last like cannon fodder character other than the bad guys. But it gets more complicated because one of the 4 bad guys, is the baby's father. And he was one of the big characters who had an arc through the whole thing. And I don't know how I felt about this character, because he kind of started off as a sleazy guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like he was going for like a redemption arc until he went the complete opposite way and just went all the way. Like,
got it.
I don't care. He was a knife in the cat and mouse game. And your goal was to kill one person. One of his buddies is like, well, if there's an even amount, if we start killing more people, doesn't that mean we're eliminating people on the red team and the blue team at the same time? So there'll be more money? And that's where he kind of takes his steep decline into being like full blown, like, I don't care about anything but the money and the mother of my child and my child, basically.
Yeah.
Or hit the mother of his child, basically, at that point, because she hasn't had the baby yet. And after that, you're like, okay, so where's his story going? And they had a really good climax. Using that character, having that character who's completely gone down the drain with his morals, and then you have 4, 5, 6 who is still holding hard to his morals, and the baby. And this is the baby's father. Well, he's willing to, when he gets a hold of the baby, he's willing to drop the baby and be like, if you come over here, I'm going to drop the baby. And that's it. But they're like, well, you need me to cross over so we can start the game, and then you can push me off and you'll save yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But he's so desperate to save himself that he's like, no, I'd rather you die over there, because, you know, it's like a 50-50 chance that one of us is going to shove the other off. I'd rather you stay over there and I'll drop the baby, and then I win and I get all the money. So this left with a struggle when he finally did get across, that ended with them not pushing the button and the father fell off. Now there's two. There's the baby in 4, 5, 6. The button has to be pushed. One of them has to die. And they held for a really long time with him holding the baby. They even had, it was a very, I really, really, really liked this scene. I think it was really well done.
But?
Because they even, like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, one of the rich people was like, oh, this is, now you can see that the rich people are kind of sad that they're like, oh, shit, all right. But, you know, one of the rich people is like, oh, sometimes it takes time to say a hard goodbye, basically.
Yep.
And knowing everything you know about this character, it's kind of a, is he going to finally break his morals or not? And there's it's a very long scene. It's very long. Where he eventually puts the baby down and jumps off the platform and dies. He stuck to his morals right to the very end. It was, when I think about it that way, it did fulfill his character, but it was not, it just wasn't satisfying, because
yeah, doesn't sound that way.
The only one who got anything out of this was the host guy finally saw that he was like, okay, everything he tried to do to corrupt 4, 5, 6 and push him over the edge didn't work. Till the very end, and he finally, he's like, So he gets a change of heart. Afterwards, he takes the baby, he takes the money, he gives the baby to, I forget who he gave the baby to. Oh, the cop, who is his brother, I think, if I remember correctly.
Oh.
And blows up the whole operation, basically.
Okay.
After everybody gets out. But it just wasn't satisfying, because it was like, okay, yes, 4, 5, 6 died for his morals and stuff, but the only, and they were like, oh, some people, there was one guy that got away, which that was pretty well done too. There was a lot of reuniting families at the end of, like, different people who had estranged people. And there was one that was like a callback to a girl from the first season who I was like, I had to like pause and I'm like, who is this character? I don't even remember who this character is. What's going on here?
I see.
But it just wasn't satisfying seeing the bad guy shift his perspective in the end, when it's like, okay, yes, in a way, when it goes back to that whole thing, breaking it down to the bread or the bingo card, yes, 4, 5, 6, right to the end, took the bread. But the bad guys still proved correct that most of the people, even right to the end, took the scratch card.
Yep. I think based on what you're telling me, it sounds like the problem is there was the guy that 456 was fighting in the end there, who you said had had an arc, and then he double backed into evil. And then it was this host guy who was trying to prove a point, who blew up everything in the end.
Yeah.
Did they have any kind of an arc for him too, or was he kind of just going one way the whole time and then does a heel turn right at the end?
The host guy was the one who was trying to prove the point to 456. He was the one who kind of let 456 in and was screwing with him. The host guy was actually playing in the games.
But he never had any doubts about his own side until he blew it all up right at the end, though,
not
right?
As far as I could tell. I would have to try and rewatch it, because he didn't really have enough character. I guess he did. He had some stuff, but he was more confident in himself the whole time. So it felt like a last minute turn, but he was curious why 456 would come back. And that's why he ended up playing in the games with 456 and trying to get closer to 456. And then at a certain point when it got too low and they had their coup, that's when he kind of snuck away and was like, yeah, that guy died.
Yeah, that's the part that sounds unsatisfying to me, is they set up people who were questioning their own morality, but the guy who did the most in the end was never really questioning of himself.
I think that's the thing, is everything, I liked everything about the scene and the ending, but it just felt 456 stuck to his morals and got an ending, but it left what was remaining down to characters we didn't really care about and felt kind of like a twist a little, and just didn't like, not a twist, but just a sharp turn. It was maybe there, but
not enough.
It feels like it wasn't earned either, because from my perspective, 456 got what he stuck to his morals, which was satisfying to see. But the bad guys were still correct. And the fact that, 456 was able to stick to his morals to the end is the reason why the bad guy shifted at the end. It just felt a little bit...
It felt like we gave you the ending that seemed natural based on what we've set up, but also we wanted a more optimistic thing to leave you with, so we're just going to do this heel turn for no reason and blow it all up.
Now, I think...
It seemed like it was naturally inclining towards a darker ending with a bit of, like, glimmer that he stuck to his own guns.
Yeah. I think it, I think the plan was to blow up the operation because the police were getting close, but it was what he did afterwards where he's like, okay, he actually went and he reunited a couple families. He helped a couple other things. He didn't have to. He found 456's daughter and brought her what was left of the money that he won from the original game. There were a lot of things he didn't have to do that he did kind of as a goodwill type thing, but it
feels forced, even just you describing it.
Yeah, it kind of felt forced, and I think that was the thing is I wasn't disappointed that 456 died, but I was disappointed at what it left after he was there, when you're sitting there and you're like, okay, you know, it came down to the three, and I'm not confident how this is going to play out. Is 456 going to kill himself to let the father and the baby go? But the father's clearly beyond the point of irredeemable.
Yep.
And it was very well done. But when you're sitting there afterwards and you're like, okay, The father died before the timer started. Now 4, 5, 6. Okay, we're left with just the baby. And the baby won. But you're sitting there and you're like, okay, so the bad guy is left. And all the characters you care about all died. Except for the cop. And one other guy that got away. Who was still kind of pretty minor. And the one girl that we knew that was one of the bad guy suit people, but just a grunt, and she helped the other guy escape. But you're sitting there and you're like, okay, all the characters you really care about are all gone, and you're like, okay, I don't know how to feel about this. I mean, yeah, 4, 5, 6 got his way, but it just, there was nothing left after that. You're like, oh, well, I have no emotional attachment to any of these characters. And it felt like they really were leaning on you having an emotional attachment to the CGI baby. Why would you? I bought into the idea of 4, 5, 6 caring for this baby. I bought into that. I did. But when 4, 5, 6 wasn't in the picture anymore and it was just the baby and that was all that was left, there just wasn't enough of a connection there to that particular character to make it really feel.
So besides the ending, season 3 in general was decent?
Season 3 was very, very well done. Having to work with so many characters and everybody having a slightly different motivation and different things going on, especially the cat and mouse game was a lot of major shifts and was very, very impressive because the game itself was relatively boring. But the way they pulled off these characters, each character with their own motivation and each with there's so many moving parts to it. And there's not a heck of a lot of dialogue in it that made it just, it was so well done that the fact that they can make you understand every single one of these characters. And there's a lot of characters at that point still. There's definitely more than 10, maybe even like 12 to 13 characters left that are like you actually care about. And they managed to make each one of them interesting. Whether they be an antagonist or a protagonist or somewhere in between, they really found a way with these characters where they used the second season games to really boost some of these characters up, to really build up. And yeah, they obviously, there you could probably guess from the beginning of the second season, like not the beginning, but after the second season, you could probably guess which characters were going to get pretty far.
Okay.
But they did a really good job at making you understand these characters. And I thought that was just really well done. And it all comes down to that idea. Like, it's almost like you could place within each character, you could probably sit there and narrow down exactly their how much they value human life.
Okay.
Being the core theme of the show, that with each character you knew their perspective on the value of human life. And there were varying levels, and I was just very impressed at how they managed these characters.
Sounds well done on the whole.
So it's like, okay, yeah, the first one was all about the games and it was a really cool concept. And then the second season had more of this play between ideals of 4, 5, 6 and the other players and the host. But then it really came down in the third season to narrow to those characters. And that's what really carried it through. Because some of the games there weren't any direct repeats, but the games became more simple.
Okay.
they weren't as complicated as they were in like the second season, or the first season had a lot of more complicated games. But it says something that it's like, okay, they may have run out of idea for more complicated games, but they made their characters carry that season hard.
You could also argue it's the exact opposite, is they could have done more complex games, but they figured the more simple the game is, the more we can focus on character while we play them.
That's true. That's true. They might have done that. They yeah, you could have come up with more complicated stuff.
They didn't want the games to overshadow the development they were building.
Yeah, and I think that's... I think you're probably right.
Because it sounds to me like that's what was happening in Season 2.
It kind of overshadowed. But at the same time, they were taking their time to build up the characters with Season 2.
Yeah.
And you got to get rid of a lot of cannon fodder. But I think Season 2, the games really played into different aspects of each character. You got to see them in more, you know, harder decisions and actually making choices and doing stuff, where the games were more linear. And other than maybe the cat and mouse one, the cat and mouse one was really well thought out. Even though it was a pretty simple game, it was a lot of character decisions. But I think that's what drove the last season, was seeing how these characters all played out. And it was just, it was so well done.
So what would you rank Squid Game Season 3 on the whole?
Definitely, I would probably, it's a good, if not two thumbs up, just because of, I'm absolutely blown away by how they managed all these characters, and how, without, yes, it needs the buildup of the second season. It definitely needs the buildup of the second season. It can't stand alone. It's literally like, it probably should have just been one long season. But at the same time, it's thematic. There is a pretty good chop there.
Okay.
But compared to the first season and the second season, the third season by far was the best.
That's pretty high praise.
I'm sure a lot of people, I've seen online that a lot of people weren't like super interested in watching it go on further, because the first season kind of self-wrapped itself up. But I think it's definitely worth it, because the third season was so well done that watching the second and third, and it's not like it's very, it's like, they're like 8 or 10 episodes, seasons of less than an hour each.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's super long, but yeah. it is well-deserved time. It is very good. The only thing was that the ending was just unsatisfying.
So should it get that Season 4 spinoff?
I don't know. The Season 4, they kind of teased, well, while the bad guy was in America with 456's, you know, going to see 456's daughter, he saw in the alleyway there was an American in a suit doing the same game in the alleyway as the recruiter would.
Yep.
And she kind of locks eyes with him in the car, and he knows what's going on, and she knows what's going on. She probably knows who he is.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I don't know if I would. The creator of the original show is not going to be a part of the spinoff show.
All right, forget it. It's going to be garbage.
That's why I'm not sure, because it's just, yeah. I don't know if I want to watch it, because it's all the characters you know and care about, they're all gone. 456's story wrapped up over 1, 2, 3 seasons.
And the original creators?
The original creator is not going to be part of it. It's going to be a whole separate team. It's all Americans.
Bringing it to America.
Yeah. I don't know how well it will be done. I know for a fact that it's, you know, it's a big moneymaker for Netflix. So obviously they're going to keep going. I can't see, unless they do something absolutely ridiculous. If they get a hold of a really good creative behind the concept, maybe. But the games that have been done already, I don't know if they can, I don't know if the games can carry it. And you have to care about the characters. I don't think this concept can be carried that much further. I think the first season, the reason it carried was because you cared about the characters. They really went in depth about the characters. But without 4, 5, 6, I don't think the second season would have worked as well. Because the whole second season was about the bad guys trying to prove 4, 5, 6 wrong. And then you grew to care about the characters that were there. And then the third season played out.
Yep.
But now you've got nobody. And you got to start fresh. And then you're going to have to care about characters in these games. And maybe they can come up with better ideas for the games. But I don't know. And the unique color palette and the unique camera angles, like especially like the set of this place is like, it's like big Lego blocks.
The only thing I can see, because you said the games that the children's games that they play are more uniquely Asian games.
Yes.
The only way I can see it being interesting is if you play more American child games, bring them.
Maybe.
Like, you're changing continents, so now the games are like, oh, this is stuff I played as a child, probably, like, Capture the Flag or whatever, so it's like...
I just think a lot of what made the original season popular was, like, Alice in Borderlands was the same idea, but done differently. It's like, yeah, they gotta play games, but they're not, like, children's games, they're like, it's more like if you were imported into a video game or something, and they got to play like mini games to stay alive.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. It's cool. But the thing that set Squid Game apart was one, that it was grounded in reality. And two, the extreme uniqueness of the whole environment. The oddly disturbing scaled up children's games, the colors, the character, like the masks and the outfits, and everybody with their uniforms, and there's something about every piece of the design that made it very unique. But if they continue it, I don't think that like that uniqueness is gonna wear off. And I think that's what set it apart from something like Alice in Borderlands. Is that it had this really unique color palette, and the consistent when they're all shuffling to the games through this like Lego block staircase, basically, and they're playing like this slow song, and it's like, okay, there's some very like, you know, and they get more unique with the camera work in this area. That those unique sets and colors and costumes and everything really work really well to set up the original concept. Yep. Then we carry through. And the carry through, it doesn't shock you as much. It's not so dramatic. And I think doing a fourth season in America, unless they go radically different, but at that point, is it even the same thing? But like, people are gonna want the iconic designs of everything. The room, the costumes, the outfits, the color schemes. They're gonna want it to be similar, otherwise there's no point to even calling it the same thing.
True.
But I think the uniqueness of that is what really shot it to popularity beyond other things that were similar. Like, it's not that unique of an idea, but it's everything combined that made it what it is. And I don't think that will carry over unless they're trying to target a new audience.
I feel like it would be billed as a soft reboot instead of a season 4.
Well, yeah, they've said that season 3 is the last season, but it's clear they're setting up for a spin-off show.
Because I think there are still a good chunk of people who don't care for foreign-made media with subtitles to watch.
Yeah.
There's definitely barriers that have been broken that way. A lot more people than 10 years ago don't care. The fact that Squid Game even became popular internationally is a testament to that.
Yeah.
But I do think an American set show, all in English, will play better in the States.
Yeah, like, my thing is that I think the audience for Squid Game, because it blew up so big, I don't know how much of an audience is left of people who didn't watch it because it was in a foreign language.
I think you're going to get a lot of people who watched Squid Game before are going to be curious, and you're going to get a lot of people who've never seen it before who are just like, oh, I never gave it a chance before because this or that reason.
That's why I can't see it lasting long. Probably I think not. It'll end up being one season long, and it's not going to do near as well as Netflix hoped.
Probably not.
But,
so final thoughts on Squid Game?
I think it's a must watch. I really do. It's, despite there being a lot of other things that are similar to it, it does so many things right. And the camera work, the characters, everything is so well done that I really do think it's a must watch. Is the first season super great? No. It's iconic for a reason. It was very popular for a reason. It's very entertaining. It's very good. But the show really shines in the second and third seasons, especially for its filmmaking aspects. It's a must watch. It's very, very, very good.
Well, as somebody who was basically on the fence to negative, you have piqued my interest. I'm still probably not going to see it forever, but you know, I'll come back to you in 2040. Hey, I finally watched Squid Game.
Squid what?
I had to watch it on like something else because Netflix ceased to be in 2035, but I watched Squid Game.
I finally watched it. It's really good.
Yeah.
I told you it was really good. I don't think I've yet to give something two thumbs up on the podcast yet, but this is my highest rating is the...
I even watched the American reboot you didn't even see. All right. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
You can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlane Media. And check out ThoughtPlane.ca for everything else we do. There's hundreds of posts in there for free. And you can donate a buck or two there if you like our work and you're feeling generous. We hope to see you on the next close-up with Ryan and Joe and Justin. Till next time.
Take care.